It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts, Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. Well, February 9th came and went. New HomePods have arrived. Jason, we'll start with you. How are you liking yours?
I am thoroughly impressed with the audio quality. I hate to sound like a cliche, like every other article that's already been written out there. Initially, right out of the box, I was a little underwhelmed. I've kind of got a terrible acoustic room that I wanted to try it in. So my den's got like 26 foot tall ceilings.
Hey, same as mine. Also terrible.
Yeah. And so it's got like an angled wall at one point. It leads into two separate hallways and into an open foyer as well as a large breakfast room. So acoustics are just probably as bad as they could possibly be in any room. And I thought that was a great place to test drive this thing. The initial underwhelming piece, I put on a piece of music that has quite a variation of instruments and high notes with some bass and good vocals. And the first 2 minutes, I was like, okay, this sounds a little better than the Sonos One. It sounded way better than the Amazon Echo. But within like 3 or 4 minutes, I don't know if it did its spatial sensing over that time, if the A8 chip worked its magic, but it crazily turned into a totally different device. I mean, it sounded nothing at the end of the song like it did at the start of the song. And then the second song that I put on sounded even better. So I don't know if there was like some kind of circuit protection for taking one right out of the box and turning it up too loud, and it was allowing the tweeters and the subwoofer to kind of wear in over time, or if it was really the A8 chip doing its, you know, sound algorithms. But the device is absolutely outstanding from an audio quality perspective. I, in the past, have had, you know, pairs of Sonos Ones as well as Play 3 and a Play 5. And the sound of the HomePod is considerably better, in my opinion, than a Sonos Play 5, which costs $150 more.
So the accelerometer that's in the thing, as I understand it, it detects when it's been moved. So it recalibrates whenever you pick it up and move it to a new location.
That's just crazy. My speaker has an accelerometer in it.
It does. It does. It knows when it's been moved. So you can take it and do that. So I think it was just probably the A8 tuning itself to the acoustics of your particular setup.
Probably the most impressive piece about this is, so it's in the same room that has my really nice THX certified home theater that, you know, is just kind of crazy over the top. So in that room, comparing a single speaker to bi-amped fronts and a really nice sub and old school Mirage towers, there's no comparison, right? The home theater just crushes it. But if you're in a surrounding room playing the volume at a reasonable level, so say 50% to 80% on the HomePod, you cannot really tell the difference other than maybe a little bit of a bass response. You can't tell the difference between what's playing if you're in the kitchen or if you're in the living room or if you're in my office room. So the amount of room filling sound is just absolutely sensational out of this thing.
That's been my experience as well. I've never really been much of an audiophile. I didn't own any of the Sonos speakers. I haven't had any of that. So when I unboxed it Friday afternoon, I went ahead and started setting it up and just playing some things. And I was really impressed because, again, my acoustical situation similar to yours, room with, you know, 20-something foot high ceilings. And, you know, I set it on the bar in between the kitchen and the main living room. And so I knew that there was going to be a lot of empty area for it to deal with, and it still sounded amazing. So I was very pleased by the sound. It was better sounding than anything that I had ever listened to from a standalone speaker. So much so that I actually really enjoy the sound a lot. The setup was really, really simple, I found. I mean, it was up and running in a matter of seconds, so that was kind of nice. You know, your iPhone sees it just like it would see a pair of AirPods, and you just select it, and you know, it's off and running. So I really kind of like that a lot. You've had some bad experiences, you were telling us over Telegram, with Apple Music, though. What's going on with that?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on here. I have a station, I'll just go ahead and tell you, it's Beastie Boys Radio that I created a couple years ago. I have kind of curated that station to play only what I like in kind of that genre of music from that time period of kind of the earlier Beastie Boys stuff, not their later stuff. And today I told it, play Beastie Boys Radio. And Siri responded and said, creating a Apple Music station called Beastie Boys Radio. And I was like, well, why are you creating a new station if I've already got one? And so first song it played was Beastie Boys. And I was like, okay, you know, that kind of makes sense. But then the secondary selections were just super obscure. It played AC/DC, which is not what I would consider. It played some like slow Pearl Jam. So I could see how someone who likes Beastie Boys might like those other two. It's just not much of a comparison. And again, I didn't understand why it wouldn't play the station that I already have. So I went to the iPhone, found the Beastie Boys station that I created and played it over AirPlay, and perfect, right? It played everything that I like, didn't have any obscure songs or things from bands that aren't what I want. So like, I love me some Pearl Jam, I love me some AC/DC, but not when I'm in the mood to listen to Beastie Boys or similar type of music.
So did you see the station that it was playing in your list? Or did it just kind of spin up one on its own that will never be seen again? Or did it mess up your station any at all? Or is it still intact?
So my station is still intact, and it did not create a new station that's showing up on iTunes on my iMac Pro or iTunes on my iPhone 10. So the only visual station representation that's left is the one that I created, but that's not what the one that played when I was talking to the HomePod.
So it's like it spun up one on its own, and it didn't use your Apple Music account to go find a playlist that you had created. Well, it's not even a playlist. It's just a radio. So it sounds like that's what it did, right? It just spun up its own, and it's not actually looking at radio stations that you've tuned yourself over time. Like if you created a playlist, you could probably ask for that playlist, that specific name playlist. But with the radio, it sounds like it's spinning up its own radio station and not looking at the ones you have previously created.
I mean, radio may be some keyword that's built in, so it knows to just say, play all music like Beastie Boys, and you use the word radio, and that's what triggered that behavior.
So my only other complaint so far, and again, this is getting, you know, used to a new device and the right syntax and, you know, what its capabilities and inefficiencies are, I went in and told it, play me something I'll like. Like I was deliberately trying to be obscure to see what it would choose for my liking. And what I've realized is that my wife and I have shared an iTunes library for years.
It played ABBA.
Dude, it started off with Shania Twain, which I was like, okay. And then it started playing Sheryl Crow. And I was like, something has really gone wrong here. We're like off in a ditch. And then it played some other feel good female artist, maybe Kelly Clarkson or something. And I was like, okay, this is totally not it. But when I first got it out of the box, so when I did the initial pairing of it, it did play what I like. And so I think it cheated and went to like a recently played radio station. So as soon as I took it out of the box, my iPhone saw it and it was like, hey, there's a HomePod. Do you want to set this thing up? Sure. So I did. And then at the end of the pairing, it says, here, I'm going to play something I think you'll like. And it starts playing Chris Stapleton. I was like, rock on. This thing is great. But boy, did it go off in the ditch with Shania and Kelly Clarkson and the others.
That is pretty weird. I got to test that. I was trying to test it just before the podcast. I wanted to play an acoustic version of a song that I was listening to last night. And despite my best efforts, the HomePod would not play the acoustic version of that song that I had just been listening to that I had marked as like on my Apple TV. I had to go into Apple Music on my Mac and select it and pipe it through. Now, I did notice when I picked AirPlay on my picked that device through AirPlay inside of iTunes on my Mac, it was playing on my Mac and my HomePod simultaneously. And I was like, that's not expected behavior, but that's weird.
Well, there's checkboxes in iTunes where you can tell it play on one or play on both, and you can uncheck the iTunes one and it'll just play on the speaker.
See, I never normally do that. I normally just invoke whatever on whatever device that I'm doing it on. So that's new to me.
In the little drop down on iTunes, you can say play on every one of the speakers, so you can play to multiple speakers all around your house from iTunes.
Sweet.
So I guess that's kind of AirPlay 2-ish, but that's just through iTunes, though. You can't do that through an iOS device.
Yeah.
I guess that's coming, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I'll have to see how from a music perspective, if it's as dumb for me as it's been for you. I did have it play, you know, random things just as a test, and a lot of the stuff it was playing neither my wife nor I recognized, so I thought that was a little bit strange.
So in the articles I've read, one of the things they still try to point out is it's kind of a one user device. That speaker is set up for your Apple Music, and you really can't have shared, like if somebody came in and wanted to play something off their playlist, so is it, or you know, a playlist that they created, is that the case? Where
that is the case. And there's also a setting inside of the Home app, which is where you manage this, by the way, just like you would any of your connected lights or whatever. You do it all through the Home app. There's a thing where you can turn off where it says don't allow that, don't allow people that are at my house to affect my music recommendations. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. So yeah, you can keep people from sort of poisoning the well.
Hey, Brian, where does one find show notes?
You can find show notes, for those who don't know, at infiniteloopback.com/episode number. So just remember, infiniteloopback.com/the episode number, and you can find the show notes. Or just go to infiniteloopback.com and click on the episode in question. Not only do we have show notes, but we also have tags for each episode. So you have an idea of which topics. Like, I can't remember which episode they were talking about. Just look for browse by topic, and you can kind of go that way. So we try to make that very intuitive for folks.
Outstanding.
I use it all the time. Thanks, Brian.
My pleasure.
So one other feature I want to talk about that we've kind of overlooked so far is the microphones on this thing are really as good as everybody says. In a very low tone from the kitchen. So imagine, if you will, I've got this large family room with these crazy high ceilings. And then in order to get to the kitchen, you have to walk through a breakfast room that can seat like maybe 10 or 12 people. So, I mean, decent sized, and then kind of go around a bar area into the kitchen proper. So from the kitchen proper at a fairly low tone, I can say, hey, lady, do something. And it, I mean, is super snappy. I mean, my wife and I were just kind of both blown away. We thought there was no way it was going to pick up, because there's a Amazon device that's in the kitchen that sits on the counter that sometimes we have to yell at to get to pick up.
Sometimes it will talk to you when you didn't say anything. So, you know, that's those Amazon devices.
Yeah, I have not seen the HomePod light up with anything like the Amazon devices do.
What's really funny, too, and I've read this in reviews and I found it to be true as well, is that when you speak to the device, you know, normally when you invoke Siri on a phone or your iPad or something like that, there's a brief pause where you see the acknowledgement or get the doot-doot, like it's listening. That doesn't happen here. So if you invoke it and then you don't say anything, mine went, as if to say, yes, keep talking. But yeah, you can just say all in one word. You can say, hey Siri, what's the weather like outside?
It's currently cloudy and 64 degrees. Expect thunderstorms, then rain starting in the afternoon. Temperatures are heading down.
You see, there was no pause in between my invoking the assistant and giving the request. It was just all one seamless thing. So that's definitely an improvement. That's definitely something that didn't exist before.
Man, I'm jealous because it's cold as you know what here in Dallas. It was about that temperature yesterday morning, and by 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon, it was like 30, 35 degrees and windy, and it was crazy. It dropped like 30 degrees in 6 hours.
But you see how fast that just sort of rolled off when I said I invoked the assistant and kept talking. I didn't have to pause. I didn't have to wait. It just did what it was supposed to do, and that's definitely different than before, so I kind of like that.
I do that with my Amazon devices, and they pick it up really fast. I mean, it's because they're always listening, I guess, more so than with iOS, they're always listening, but it's not like I generally wait for my iOS devices just a little bit to make sure they pick up.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But the always listening really helps a lot. And so,
yes, I mean, it's the only thing that it's supposed to be doing. So I realize that's not as impressive. I mean, it's just different behavior. If it's something you're used to, you've trained yourself in using your phone for this long.
Gotcha.
You don't have to do that anymore. So that's a nice touch. If you didn't get AppleCare on this, the repairs for this are $279. Considering the unit costs $350, that's a little bit strange. So you got AppleCare for yours, right, Jason?
I did. And I used to never buy AppleCare until I got to talking to you guys. And so now I just, you know, bought it without really thinking about it. And here you are, Mr. I'm not going to get one, getting one on launch day. And then you decide to even go more rebel and you're like, well, I'm going to go bareback and not get Apple Gear.
Normally, I get Apple Care for everything, but in this particular case, it's a stationary speaker. I'm never going to touch it. It's going to be sitting in one place. So I figured the odds, you know, with a phone or a laptop or an iPad, those things are mobile. You take them around, you accidentally drop them down the staircase, you smash them on a paver stone in the backyard. I'm just throwing out examples here. So those things I can see as needing Apple Care.
So for me, it's a little bit different in the standpoint of, I feel like the long-term home of this device is probably going to be my nightstand in the master bedroom. And I have a cup of coffee in the morning or, take a cup of water to bed or something. It's very possible that I would knock one of those over and get the device wet. I also sleep with a CPAP machine. Sometimes when I get restless, the hose will get wrapped around my arm or something. I'll yank the thing off the nightstand. So it might take the speaker with it. But for the next couple of months, my bedroom is actually going to be in the den of my house due to my foot surgery. And it's going to be on the nightstand next to me, predominantly as a speakerphone and something that I can just kind of turn on quickly to listen to some music without having to fire up the whole home theater system, especially when my wife is sleeping. So having two large dogs, me being clumsy, about to be in a cast and crutches, $39 was a no-brainer to give me peace of mind for 2 years.
Fair enough. I'm hoping I never have to get repairs or anything like that. If I do, I guess I'll just end up having to get a new one. So let's talk about clickbait articles. There was a clickbait article that came out Friday on the HomePod on The Verge. And it was called "The HomePod is the Point of No Return for Apple Fans." Do you guys have a chance to look at this article?
Do you even have to say it's The Verge? Come on. I mean, it's like they're the king of clickbait Apple articles.
The fact that the tagline was this device is openly hostile to any hardware or software not made by Apple. It's like, what do you mean openly hostile?
Yeah, that's why I was like, what does it jump up and kick Android's ass when it walks by? Like,
it's a hyperactive 2-year-old with jelly on his hands.
Ah, that's a good one. That's actually a great title for the show. No, the author of this so-called article dings Apple for acquiring an iPhone to use the HomePod, and he forgets that, like the Apple Watch has been the same way. It requires Apple Music, blah, 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 blah. I mean, this is the same sort of hyperbole that we've heard for years. It's just, it's kind of nonsense.
But guess what? You don't have to have an iPhone to use HomePod.
Yeah, you do. You can't set one up without it. You cannot set one up without it. So yes, you do.
You can't set one up with an iPad?
At least had to have an iOS device. I thought you actually had to have an iPhone for that.
So take my mom, for instance. She carries a old school Motorola Crazer flip phone that every couple of years I have to go scour, the bowels of the internet.
Craigslist.
To find her a new one that will replace the old one. But she is inseparable from her iPad. But she cares nothing about an iPhone. And this is a device that I think that they would absolutely love. And I know lots of families that have iPads that have no other iOS devices in them. So to say that, it's iPhone only is, I don't know, I think it's a bit disingenuous.
It's iOS only, maybe. It's still a...
Fair enough.
If you have an Android device, you're not going to be using this that much.
The point of this article is you're not going to get new people who aren't into the Apple ecosystem into the Apple ecosystem, I think was the thrust of the article, not the semantics of which device.
Right. From what I've saw, even if you have Apple Music on an Android device, which there's like four of those people, even that won't work on the Correct. On the HomePod. But I think that's personally reasonable. What I don't think is reasonable is that you can't use Spotify on it, which is... That's kind of stupid.
All right, we're going to get to that. Yes, you absolutely can use Spotify on it, Jim. But anyway.
Well, the other thing that I think is super disingenuous is they ding it for not having Bluetooth and they ding it for not having an aux in. Well, guess what? Sonos has been the darling of this dumbass blog for years, and those devices don't have it either.
Well, not only that. I mean, first of all, to back up for just a second, the interoperability or lack of interoperability with other services. Look at the Apple TV, right? The TV app works with Prime Video. It works with Netflix, works with Hulu, works with all these services. If I ask to watch a TV show, it'll say open in and it'll pop me up, whatever. It doesn't just put the iTunes store at the prominent position. It looks at the services you're subscribed to and gives you the option. So the Apple TV is a good precedent for what we could probably expect to see from the HomePod. I think all this... this gnashing of teeth and rending of clothes is nonsense because we have precedent for them working with other services. But I kind of feel that it's stupid when they say that, oh, you know, it requires an iOS device. And it's Apple back in the old days needed interoperability. That's why we got iTunes on Windows. But, you know, we have 1.3 billion iOS devices in use now. We just talked about that last week. So who cares that they're using their platform to launch other platforms, right? I mean, it's not a bad thing to use the most popular device in the history of modern electronics to jumpstart an entire product line. And giving itself priority in that respect is not a bad thing. If you want the Echo and the Google Home are monetizing your data, right? That's how they're making money off you. Apple makes their money off you when you buy the hardware. So it's not their business model. It's not the business model to go, you know what, we have to worry about how it's going to interact with everything else right out of the gate. Because, you know, the Apple TV didn't do that either, but in time it did. So I don't know. I think they're making a lot of complaints about nothing. And yes, you can do AirPlay with all of these things. So you can start something up on your phone and send it straight to your speaker. So yes, it does work with any audio source.
Yeah, I think Jason's point about Sonos is valid here because The Verge freaking loves some Sonos. If you went back and searched over the years for all the things they posted about Sonos, it would be a lot of articles. So I think it makes sense what Apple's doing. You know, it could get better over time. They're going to add different things. But yeah, I think the article is just trying to scare people.
Openly hostile.
It's not working. You know?
Well, talk about a walled garden, right? So in this article, it says, my point is that purchasing a HomePod is nothing at all like purchasing a Sonos One. This is both a speaker and an anchor. Well, guess what, folks? You can use Spotify on Sonos, and you can use Apple Music in Sonos. But you know how you use it? You have to launch the Sonos app, and you have to use their interface to the Spotify and their interface to Apple Music, which is not the same as the Apple Music app on your phone or the Spotify app on your phone.
What? You mean I can't just talk to it and make it use both of those?
The only way you can make noise come out of a Sonos is through the Sonos proprietary application.
Sounds like it's openly hostile to any technology that's not its own.
Touché, sir.
I think it's a lot of hyperbole. I mean, the Apple TV, again, look at that as the model. That's what we're going to see in the future. I'm fairly certain.
So I think we also should do some follow-up and see, can you have a non-iOS device other than an Apple TV to be able to set up the HomePod?
You can't. Let me paste this into the chat real quick.
I mean, it's like having to have a phone to set up a watch.
But you can set it up with an iPad, right?
You have to have an iOS device. So that, I think we're getting caught up on like the minutia. It's the point is you're not going to get someone who's not ever had, like if you had an iPod back in the day, you still had to have a Mac or a PC to set it up way back when. So I don't know. This is not really new for them, but you had to have an iOS device to set it up. You can't just go into someplace where, oh, I have, you know, all Android. I want to see what this is all about. Even though I subscribe to Apple Music, you can't do that. You have to have an iOS device.
Well, so another analogy that I kind of came up with earlier when I was kind of reading through this hostile article is Ford doesn't make GT500 wheels to fit Corvettes. So why does Apple need to make devices that support other companies or other hardwares or other platforms? It's not like, as a consumer, I'm all for that. I would love to see HomePod really turn into the next iPhone platform. The original iPhone didn't do a whole lot of anything other than browse the web and check your email. And then a year later, we got
copy and paste
App Store. And yeah, well, no, that was like a couple years later.
Well, the reason Google and Amazon make that interoperability a priority right out of the gate is because they don't care what you do with the device so long as they can mine your data for their own use. What music service you're listening to, if you're listening to theirs, great. But if not, their whole business model is, okay, he's using it to control music. I'm going to take that data and do something with it. Apple doesn't have that business model, so Apple doesn't have to have the interoperability. They're not sitting around, all right, how are we going to mine their data to be able to sell it? So that's, I think, why it's not a focus right out of the gate. And it blows people's minds because, well, now the expectation is it has to be able to do all of this out of the box from day one. And it's, I don't know, I like the less creepy business model a little bit better myself.
Exactly. I was about to say the same thing, just from the standpoint of we've come to expect Amazon was obviously, I think obviously, at least first in this space, and then Google quickly, you know, trying to catch up. And then now here at Apple is just taking their sweet time doing what they're going to do. You know, Apple's going to Apple. We know that. And so their device, it fits in the same shelf at Best Buy, but it's not the same thing. You know, it's just one of those.
It fits on the shelf next to Sonos, not next to the Amazon or Google devices.
Yeah, okay. I can see that. But people want to put it next to the Google and Amazon devices because it has Siri. So, I mean, it's
a multi-purpose device, I think is what you're saying.
It's not a smart home speaker, and it's not a, I don't even know what you would call the Sonos, it's just a
music device, a high-end music device right now.
A high-end standalone speaker. It fits in the middle of them. And even, I mean, I think, I don't know if you have anything in the show notes, I don't remember, but we had talked about it last week. It's not even fully capable on Siri yet. Like, it doesn't have the full,
right,
full,
it's not,
breadth of everything it's Siri not ubiquitous can do yet.
Right. Right. I mean, just like it is across all the other devices, that inconsistent experience they have to sort of lock down.
Well, Jim, you mentioned Apple being Apple. The one thing on HomePod that I noticed that is totally not Apple being Apple is the iOS version number 11.2.5 actually has a build number after it that indicates that this production device shipped with a beta version. So this is like beta version 7 of 11.2.5 that's on my production launch day device with no iOS firmware update available for me to download yet.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Did it update as soon as you started it? Because
mine did not.
That almost never happens with Apple devices, which I find quite surprising. Any other device, when you turn it on, it immediately wants to update immediately. Whereas with Apple devices, if you buy a device 6 months later, because they sell through so crazy, that they don't have devices that were made 3 months ago and set on a shelf. They make them and sell them. So when they make it, it's got the latest OS on it usually. Very rarely will you buy anything from Apple that doesn't have the latest firmware / iOS version on it.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. You can turn on the automatic OS updates inside of the Home app too. So I'm hoping that'll just happen behind the scenes. I can't wait for the first releases to come out to see how that's handled. But I would love to have a device that truly updates itself that I don't have to go in and do. So Sonos made a Spotify playlist for Apple's HomePod with hidden "We're going to be friends" message. Did you guys see this?
I did. I thought it was pretty cute.
Yeah, it was cute. I mean, you know, you got to have fun with it. You know your beat.
The message was, "Hello, Apple. Something about us together feels right. Even though you're crazy for this HomePod, remember, two is better than one. Just playing. It's a party. Everybody's coming to my house. Even you. Come as you are, fruit machine. No matter what you're told, we're going to be friends over everything." So,
I love the fruit machine. That's pretty funny.
Fruit machine is a nice, that was a great song. That was a good find. Yeah, I think they're having fun with it.
This is all the people from Sonos sitting around going, "How long do you think our company will last? Hey, let's make a playlist."
At least they didn't put "This is the End" by The Doors on there, so that's nice.
At first, I thought it was a little passive-aggressive. Then I thought about it a little more. I was like, no, this is actually aggressive-aggressive. I like it.
Yeah, it's all in good fun. All right, so until we've had more than 2 days with our HomePods hands-on, then I guess we'll have maybe more to say about it next week. But I think that's all we can reasonably be expected to figure out in the, day and a half that we've had it. We got it basically toward the end of day on Friday, and we're recording on Sunday morning as usual, so not a lot of time spent with it thus far to be able to really put it through its paces, other than I really like the way it sounds. So, let's see. So, an intern leaked the source code for iOS 9 this week and posted it to GitHub. Did you guys read all about this and the horrid details around this?
I didn't read the entire article, but it seems pretty damning for proprietary code to leak like that.
I thought there was a lot said about it. It was a small portion of code from iOS 9, so I didn't think it was a big deal, but it was everywhere, all over TechMeme and a couple other sites that I frequent. I was kind of shocked that it was that big a deal, it being so old and so little an amount, but I guess
the big deal is the iBoot part of the code, the part that allows the bootloader. That's the crown jewel that Apple really needs to protect, because at that point you're able to jailbreak the device. And if you can jailbreak the device, you could potentially do things like, how do I compromise the phone? So law enforcement, for example, would probably be really excited to be able to see that iBoot code. Now, even though it's three revisions back, that code probably doesn't change all that much.
Until now.
Okay, that makes sense.
Now iOS 12 is going to be delayed while Apple has to go back and refactor all of that stuff to, thanks jailbreakers.
Well, so I did read, you know, several articles about this, and it seems like they have known that the code has been out in the wild for months and months now. So this
since was 2016, not, it looks like.
Yeah. So, and then the other thing that was posted was that what was posted on GitHub was only a fairly small subset of what was actually stolen, that there's considerably more code out there. And yet again, Apple still doesn't seem that concerned about it.
Well, the interesting thing to me is some intern had access to the source code for iOS. That's crazy. But getting that, and if you read the details of the article, which we'll link to if you haven't seen it already, this intern was only going to share it with some of his friends in the jailbreak community. And of course, don't tell anybody. And then, you know, it disseminates. That never works, of course. What kind of idiot wouldn't think that this is going to, something that valuable isn't going to be shared. So I hate to be the person that did this, because the legal hammer that's going to come down is going to come down hard. They don't take that, despite what they're saying and how they're acting all cool about it. They're not gonna be nice about this. This is gonna be.
It harkens back to when the Half-Life source code leaked. To me, you know, there was the one guy that was gonna show the one other guy, and then all of a sudden, it's all over the internet.
There isn't just no showing one person anything on the internet. Once it's out there, it is out there. At least to Apple's defense. They have hardware protections on the phone. They do have
totally
the ability. And plus, this is a really old revision. So, I don't know. There's all sorts of shenanigans they could do to fight. But now they're going to have to be distracted to make sure the integrity of the operating system isn't compromised, instead of working on new. Maybe this is why we're getting the Snow Leopard release of iOS. maybe that's why they're doing it. They're shoring up what they have. You asked last week, where did this come from? Maybe this was it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, ask Jennifer Lawrence about that, man. You get it out there once, and then it's out there everywhere.
Forever. You know, but even though they say there's no reason to be concerned, there's a reason they don't open source, you know, core parts of iOS. I mean, yeah, of iOS. macOS, of course, has had the Darwin releases going back to the earliest days of OS X. So they did open source some of the underpinnings of the OS. But yeah, this from the iOS perspective, this could be potentially bad. But we'll see. The real canary in the coal mine will be whether or not law enforcement agencies are able to do something with this.
Well, instead of the first question being, do you have his phone? The second question will be, what version of iOS do you think it's running?
Yes, because, you know, you have to think not that many devices. You know, to Apple's credit, if you don't upgrade your OS on your phone, it will nag you until the day you do it. It's almost as annoying as Facebook Messenger.
Almost.
So, thought that was pretty bad. Let's see, what else is going on? So the battery issues that have plagued older phones apparently don't plague the iPhone 8 or iPhone 10. So we won't be needing an iOS update for Throttlegate for the newer phones, only the older phones.
What? I can't get a new battery for my iPhone 10?
Wouldn't that be great? You should try that. Just walk in there. I demand a new, nay, need a new battery for my iPhone 10 and see what they
thought. This was only supposed to be $29.
A friend dropped their phone this week. The Face ID stopped working. Brought it into the Apple store. They said it'd be about 3 hours repair time. They ended up replacing the phone.
Yeah, sometimes that's just easier. A friend of my wife's has a brand new iPhone 10. She got it like a week and a half ago, and she dropped it within a few days and didn't have the AppleCare Plus. And that, too, is $279 to repair the screen if you don't have AppleCare Plus. $29 if you have AppleCare Plus. So always get the AppleCare.
Well, that $279 is the dum-dum tax.
Yeah, that was the That was the non-OtterBox tax, I guess, for some of those folks that are prone to drop it.
So this week, I bought a second Echo Dot.
What?
Boo.
Is it because you now have a wall inside your apartment?
It is. I have a wall. Amazon had a couple of bulbs on sale, smart bulbs, and I've been wanting to try out some of those. These variable bulbs that you could change the warmth of the bulb to like bright or, you know, soft white or, you know, whatever. So I ordered two of those bulbs, and I got to thinking, well, my Dot is in my bedroom now because I moved the Mackie speakers in there that it was plugged into. So I guess I need another Dot for the living room because I'm not going to walk in my bedroom to tell it to turn on the kitchen lights, because that's where I was going to put these two bulbs, because I've got hanging lights in the kitchen. So I'm like, all right, so I ordered another Dot, and I ordered a white one thinking I would put it in the kitchen. And I got home and I realized the other one I had was also white, because back when I ordered it around Christmas, that was the only thing they had was white. The black ones were out of stock. So anyway, so I set up these two lights in the kitchen, and I put the Echo Dot in the living room in here, and I actually paired the Echo Dot via Bluetooth with my soundbar. So now I can say, connect to the soundbar. You know, I don't keep it connected there all the time because you can't hear the responses if the TV's playing through there. But if I want to listen to my Spotify, I can just say, hey, connect to the soundbar, and then I can tell Siri whatever I want, or sorry, tell the Amazon lady whatever I want. So yeah, so meanwhile, while HomePod's coming out, I went whole hog into the Amazon ecosystem, and I now have two dots in my 900 square feet, and it's pretty nice. I mean, you can actually sync these up and play music in different rooms now. It works well with my lights in the kitchen. I can tell it to turn on the kitchen lights, and usually that works. So I've got a couple other plugs that were Siri or Amazon enabled, and I've got a couple that were Amazon Google enabled, but at least everything I have is Amazon enabled. So I, at least for my home automation, it looks like I'm going to the Amazon camp.
Boo. Well, one feature of the Echoes that you probably don't have much of a use for right now, but that we're probably going to use over the next couple of months, is my wife plans on still sleeping upstairs in the master bedroom, at least for the first couple of weeks after my foot surgery, to make sure I don't get my foot hit in the middle of the night or something like that. So the drop-in feature, it's going to be really nice that we've got, you know, a full-size Echo downstairs and a full-size one upstairs. So she'll actually be able to say, you know, drop in on downstairs, and we can use it as a two-way intercom, you know, while I'm in recovery.
Old school intercom in your two-story house.
Yup.
Nice. Well, speaking of things that Jim doesn't use very often, let's talk about the Apple Watch.
He tells the time.
It's 10:31.
He does tell the time with it. So, you know, there's that.
I just used it right there. 10:31.
Never uses Siri on it, doesn't put his boarding pass on it. You know, last week we were talking about the Apple Watch and some of the discontinuation of app support. I've had some Wi-Fi issues with my watch, and I don't think since I got the Series 3 it was actually working with my Wi-Fi. So since I got it in the fall, I would notice if I left my phone somewhere in the house, and I would go to a distant part of the house, or I'd go outside or whatever, it would just show disconnected. It would never kick over to the Wi-Fi, and I thought that was really odd. I've just never really paid attention to it because I normally always have my phone fairly close. And this past week I decided to really just sort of dig into it, and these guys got the worst of it over Telegram because, you know, we were going back and forth of trying to troubleshoot what was going on with my watch. And it wouldn't work at all. Would not work no matter what I did. So I ended up having to call Apple support, and I would do the pair and unpair and do all those things. And I get support on the line, and they replace my watch, and that was nice. And I get home and it's still not working. And I'm really frustrated with this because it should work. So when I go into the office, it actually does connect to my office Wi-Fi. So I thought, okay, cool. You know, at least it's not a problem with a watch this time. It's a problem with my Wi-Fi at home. And after much digging and much consternation, I discovered what the problem was. We all have these, and we talk about this quite frequently on the show, the Unify setup with the Ubiquiti. And last Friday, I had turned on fast roaming, which is the 802.11r. I had noticed in my house when you move from one hotspot to the other, if you were talking on your phone and you're using the Wi-Fi calling, it would drop the call consistently as it moved from one hotspot to the other. So, you know, I've done things to try and tweak that. I had changed all the channels on the different APs. I had gone in and, you know, reduced the transmit power, trying to make it so that I would seamlessly move from one to the other. And finally, I had turned on the 802.11r. Now, there's a nice thing. I think I posted this on Twitter, where it says, be careful with this, it's an experimental feature, and if you enable it, some devices may not work properly. Well, one of those devices 100% is the Apple Watch. It will not connect to Wi-Fi at all if that is enabled. Now, since I was having issues, since I got the watch in September, but it never really inconvenienced me, I never really paid much attention to it. Well, it just so happens that I decided to troubleshoot it 3 days after I had turned that on. So even though it's coincidental that had happened, that was not the cause of my problem, because it has never worked for me since I've gotten the Series 3. It does now, but it hadn't before. I knew when I would create a new SSID that didn't have the 802.11r enabled, everything worked fine. But it didn't click with me because, you know, I didn't think it would keep something from connecting to Wi-Fi. But sure enough, it did.
And the reason it works now is because you invoked AppleCare and they sent you a new watch, right?
Correct. When I was at work, so another case where my they don't have that enabled at work. So I would leave my phone at my desk and, you know, go to the restroom or go to the parking lot, whatever. It would also get the disconnected thing. I would never see the kick over to Wi-Fi like you were supposed to have. So there was absolutely an issue with the watch. So outside of the context of my house, and again, I didn't have this feature enabled until a week ago from when we're recording this. So it wasn't like this has been on the entire time. It was just something that I turned on, you know, last Friday night. So that was kind of annoying, but at least my watch now works as intended. For those of us who use it for more than just telling time.
Well, I had kind of my first disappointing experience with Siri on the watch this week. I got a new pair of shoes from Zappos. Loved the shoes, but the shoelaces and the boots were too short. Like, I couldn't get to the top holes to cinch them down. So I go to the local leather shop. He looks at him. He's like, oh, you need 54-inch laces. He didn't have any. Sends me to Ingles. I go pick up some 54-inch laces at Ingles. Get home, and they're too short. So it was like 3 inches longer than the laces that I had, but still too short. So at this point, I find out that kind of the next natural progression is 60-inch laces. Go to Amazon, find some that are similar in color to the ones that came with these boots, get them ordered. Well, when they come in, they're Russian boot laces from some tactical shop in Russia. And so everything was in metric and Russian. So before I took them out, I wanted to make sure that I'd gotten the right size. So I, you know, looked at the Apple Watch and said, hey, lady, how many inches in 155 centimeters? And she responded, I don't know. If you ask me that on your iPhone, I'll be able to tell you. And I was like, that's kind of, you know.
What?
Yeah.
That is strange.
Yeah, that was a little disappointing.
It actually said that? It's smart enough to know that your iPhone can do it, but it won't do it itself.
Yep. Either that or she was, you know, feeling fat and lazy and eating bonbons that day.
So if I take my watch and I say, how many centimeters in an inch?
2.54 centimeters.
Yeah, I could have told you that.
No, but what I'm saying is the watch told me, genius.
But ask her how many inches are in 155 centimeters.
How many inches are in 155 centimeters?
Your watch hates you, Jason.
It does. I mean, so
for the record, so, mine told me exactly what Jason said and didn't tell me to go to my iPhone.
That's crazy.
You and Jim have such problems with Siri because you're mush mouths. That's what I'm going to say. Mush mouth.
Man, I enunciate more than any of you guys.
What? Impossible.
Well, so if we're going to bash on the Apple Watch for a quick minute, even with the OD Sport Loop, I am back to having crazy heart reading. So for today, it says my resting heart rate is 38. The other day I had screenshots where it said that my current heart rate was 198, 168, 157, and then 72 all in the same minute.
So if you have multiple watches that have that problem, man, there has got to be something going on with you. There has got to be some mutant ability that you have to destroy.
Green lasers.
Something going on with that green laser, man. I mean, I don't understand this. What technology does the Fitbit use? Does it use a green laser as well?
It does. And by the way, I need to go to my safe space now because that was hurtful.
Triggered. I don't understand how you have these issues consistently from the Series 0, you know, before there was a Series 1. I've had that, the Series 2, the Series 3. Had a couple replaced under Apple Care, both the Series 2 and the Series 3. Mine is almost all the time accurate on what my heart rate is. Very rare. Sweat will mess up with it, I've noticed, when I'm working out. And if I'm using something where I'm trying to get really accurate readings, I need to have something that's fairly tight on the wrist. But other than that, I have not seen near the issues that you have. This is very, very strange. You don't have a tattoo on your wrist or anything, do you?
I have no tattoos, period. In our Telegram chat earlier this week, I sent a link to one of the Apple discussion forums, and apparently for a certain subset of people, this is a fairly common problem because the article was, or the forum post was like 6 or 7 pages long. And then on the opening topic, you know, there's like a place where you can check, I am having this problem too. And there was a couple hundred people that had hit that. So this is nothing new, and it did seem to be more prevalent. Everybody thinks it's watchOS 4 because people who had like Series 2 watches who said they had no problems before are now having problems with watchOS 4.
Which arm do you wear your watch on?
Left.
Have you tried, just for grins and giggles, moving it to the right and it still happens?
Yep, same thing.
Can you bend spoons with your mind?
On command.
That is a strange one right there. I've heard of the issue with people with tattoos on their wrist where the green laser isn't able to check the dilation of the blood vessels in the arm, but that is really, really weird that it gets your heart rate so inconsistent. And you, for the record, you know for a fact 100% when you use the Fitbit, you don't have an inconsistent heart rate.
Yeah, and the thing is, the Fitbit is sampling every like 30 seconds or every minute. So when you're charting your heart rate through their software, it's way more accurate because, you know, sometimes I look at the Apple Watch and it tells me what my heart rate was like 14 minutes ago. Whereas the, like when you are looking at the Fitbit, like when you turn it and the screen comes on, it goes to a live current view right then of what your active heart rate is.
Yeah. With no color display or no advanced display to power, it can sit there and sample constantly where that would kill the Apple Watch.
Yep.
Does it tell you the time?
That it does.
I think Jim is sold. I think he's going to get rid of his Apple Watch for a Fitbit. Gramps.
I looked down at mine, and I will say right now, I'm in Dallas, Texas, and it says snow starting soon.
Well, that's pretty strange.
So that's kind of crazy, right? That's got to be wrong.
That's got to be broken.
30 degrees.
Snow in Dallas. Anything could happen. Yeah, this week also, too, I switched from the modular face over to the Siri face to see how that that works out, and I'm kind of liking it. At first, I didn't, but I tweaked the data sources to be something more specific to what I use, and I'm kind of liking it. It just pops up. It cycles up the next thing. It does all of your calendar appointments, so at a glance, I know not only what I'm doing now, but what's coming up right after that. When you run out of appointments for the day, it starts telling you things like the weather and news stories and other things, so it's taken some getting used to, but not as bad as I remember when I first tried it. I've decided I'm just going to try to live with it for a while and see if I get used to it. And so far, so good. There was an article this week about 5 ways that Apple can stop developers from abandoning the Apple Watch. We talked about that last week, how you know Slack had dropped theirs, and in the past few months, Google and Twitter and a few others had dropped theirs as well. And you know what they had suggested was bringing back Glances, which I totally agree with. I loved the Glances. I think that was much better than the dock. Opening up access to the Siri watch face, which I also would agree, give me more data sources. Let developers make their own faces. Yeah, sure, why not? Revamp notifications, which, I don't know, the notifications work pretty well now, and open a store on the watch. In my opinion, those are great and all, but break the dependency on the iPhone. I understand having the iPhone is a requirement when it launched, but as it gets better and better, I want it to be its own thing where I don't have to be, you know, connected to it constantly.
I think now that you've got LTE, that's the key that you could make that break now.
Yeah, right? I think so too, but the UI is kind of limited too. Like, I understand needing a phone to manage some of the functions on the watch. Like, having the watch app on the iPhone, I totally get, but I don't know. I want to see it like sort of like AirPods or the HomePod, where you get a new watch and it detects it, you set it up, and then you're on your way, more so than having to do everything through it. Giving me multiple ways to manage it through the phone, like have the phone or on device itself, would be great, but not having it as a requisite to manage it would be fantastic. Also, getting Siri more accurate on the watch or capable of more things, I think would be better. I really want to turn off the voice on it as well. I don't like when I tell it to do things and it gives me both a visual and an audio cue that it worked. I liked it on the Series 2 where I would tell it to do things and I would get a representation on the watch's face itself and that was it. Because oftentimes I would just want to tell it to do things and I want to see that it worked, but I don't want to have it tell me that it worked. And I haven't seen a way to turn the talking back to you off on the watch.
I actually turned the sound on my watch about 2 weeks ago and I like it. Like, it's just a real quiet ding. It's not enough to really, you know, be annoying in a meeting or anything. And I've had one now long enough to where I tend to just ignore most of the haptics. I just don't even feel them. But that little ding, I had always had my watch on silent mode. And I finally just was like, let's try this out. And I like it.
I never make mine make noises at all. I always keep mine on silent mode with prominent haptics because I also keep my phone on vibrate all the time too. I want those notifications to notify me and not anyone else in the room. I think it's more, it's nice if I go to the movies and I don't have to put my phone in silent mode, or if I'm in a meeting and I don't have to, you know, have that silent. I want to know I have notifications. I don't need anyone else to, and that's perfect for me.
A little segue here, going to the movies. I got my movie pass and I used it for the first time this week, so there's that.
Woo. How are you liking it?
It worked fine the first time, and the price of the movie was more than I'm paying for the first month, so I've already got my money's worth.
Yeah, I used it twice when I first got it, and there just hasn't been anything out. Of course, January is typically the worst month for movies, but Black Panther will be coming out this week, which I will go see. So I'm looking forward to that, and I will finally use it. I've been trying to find movies that I want to go see. Like, I've actively been looking, and nothing appealed to me. So that was, even for a flat fee, I didn't want to do it.
I was going to go this weekend just because, hey, yeah, you know, you just burn up 3 hours, go see a movie. But I was like, I don't want to see any of that. I went and saw I, Tonya this week, and it was really good, so...
We'll see if I keep this for the long run, but I'm hoping over the summer months when you have, you know,
a blockbuster a day, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
Well, yeah, the bunch of big stuff comes out, and I normally don't get to see all of them, but now maybe, you know, especially I used it in St. Louis this week when I was there for work, and that's kind of my plan for this is, you know, either on Tuesday or Wednesday night, I can go see a movie while I'm in St. Louis instead of just sitting around the hotel watching Netflix on my iPad.
Speaking of Netflix and streaming services, it looks like that Facebook picked up a half-hour dramedy starring Elizabeth Olsen this week. So now Facebook is making TV shows. What do you guys think of that?
That's a big yawn from all three of us, I think.
Yep.
The only part of that that caught my attention was Elizabeth Olsen.
I don't like the fact that all these things are making TV shows now. That's I don't know. I don't like this. This is not good. I don't want social networks to have TV shows. I guess it makes sense.
Elizabeth Olsen doing a show for Facebook is like the Manning brothers doing, you know, insurance or television commercials. I mean, it's just kind of beneath them, I think.
Okay, the Dirty Dancing one during the Super Bowl was pretty good.
Yeah, that was really good. Something like this, Facebook picking up something like this doesn't surprise me, but I'm going to like cry in my sleep if I have to start watching like NFL or college football games on Facebook or Google or Amazon.
So what do you want to bet, since Amazon's already got into this game with football on Prime Video? And, you know, football hasn't been drawing the audiences that it has in recent years. So what do you want to bet when those rights come up for renewal that Facebook plops down a bunch of money to rope people in? I feel it's going to happen.
Oh, I totally see it. ESPN/Disney, they don't have the money that ABC, Apple, Amazon, Google, they don't Facebook, they don't have the money on reserve that those companies have. And it's pretty much a given that ESPN's going to lose Monday Night Football in the next round of bidding because there are other people that can pay more that, you know, it's just worth more to them than ESPN. ESPN is going away. Well, it's not going away, but it's about to change drastically. Disney stock, I would recommend selling.
What? No, where they're buying Fox. It's weird. They're going to buy Fox for $60 billion, but ESPN has been such a money loser for them has been the problem. Not that they don't have the cash, but it's not going to be worth the money that the NFL is going to ask for, I don't think. But I certainly think Facebook or Apple or one of those would actually pony up, you know, tons of cash to get that. To jumpstart a nascent video platform? Absolutely they will. Though I wonder, since Prime doesn't report the numbers that they get off of, you know, like through conventional ratings, I do wonder how many people are watching football on Prime Video. You guys ever watch any of the games on Prime?
Not yet.
Negative.
I haven't either.
But I'm sure it's coming. But maybe it was because Prime didn't have an Apple TV app then. I don't remember.
That's true. It didn't launch until late in the season. So those Thursday night games. And I think Twitter used to carry those in the beginning. Then they moved over to Prime. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out, though.
Well, there's a rumor that there's going to be considerably fewer Thursday night games because, one, people are still kind of boycotting NFL over social and political issues. But secondary, the NFL is everywhere now. So, you know, in the good old days, it used to be you had Sunday football and you had Monday night football. And that was it. And so throwing Thursday in there and then, you know, after the college season is over, they play Saturday games. So, you know, the latter half of the season, you have games on Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, which is just kind of unheard of for NFL, you know, if you're looking back from an old school perspective.
The other thing is a lot of players are complaining about the Thursday night games, especially after having to play in a Sunday game, that it definitely contributes to injuries having to turn around that fast. So they're trying to figure out how to put something together to where if they have a Thursday night game that perhaps that you only have a Thursday night game like after an off week or some sort of scheduling voodoo where they don't have to turn around as many Sunday to Thursday games. Anyway, that's not really for this podcast, I guess, but it's interesting.
Outkick the Apple coverage. All right, well, looking at the list of things we're going to talk about, I think that's about it for this week. So you guys got anything before we go?
Happy Valentine's Day, ladies.
You can find Jim on Tinder, Bumble, Yelp, wherever fine profiles are sold. You can even look him up on Waze. No, I don't know if you guys ever watched that show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. It's actually a very good show if you don't watch it. They had a throwaway gag like a year and a half ago where it was like, I saw you updated your relationship status on Waze. I didn't even know that was a thing. And of course, it's not, but...
That's funny.
It was a good poke at how those... how all these services seem to be taking on the ubiquity of other services.
I did see a funny meme this morning. It was the Geico Gecko, and it said, I just saved a lot of money on Valentine's Day by switching to single.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Well, folks, that'll do it for this week. Join us back next week when we've had more time to play with our HomePods for more than a day.
And I'm going to go diddle my non-HomePod.
All right, later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas. Later, fellas.
Please visit InfiniteLoopBack.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at InfinLoopBack. That's at I-N-F-I-N LoopBack. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.